Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Ko'ula'u's Secret by Sharon K. Connell. Kylie Flanagan receives a strange note from her Army Major father. The wording tells her something's not right. When he doesn't answer her calls, she sets off for Oahu to find out what's going on. His commanding officer has no explanation but has ordered an investigation. Honolulu detectives O'Shea and Swanson are checking on the information the major had given them about criminal activity on the post, but information about what they won't say. Can Kylie trust them? One of the detectives causes sparks to fly, and not the good kind. Not at first. The mysterious Ko'ula'u mountain range holds many secrets. Could the reason for the disappearance of Kylie's father be one of them?
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I have with me Tanya Stowe and Sharon K. O'Connell. All right, I'm going to start over because that cat is... Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today I have with me two guests, Sharon K. Connell and Tanya Stowe. And welcome back to my show, ladies.
Thank you for inviting us.
So we're going to talk a little bit about their books first, and then we're going to get in and probably talk about who knows what. We never know where this goes. So Tanya, can you go first? Your book is Vanished in the Mountains. This is the one of your more recent romantic suspenses. So tell us a little bit about, what's that book about?
Actually, it's about a young woman who's working with women who have been abused in a shelter, and she kind of stumbles across what she thinks might be a sex ring, actually, that young women are disappearing across several counties. And when she starts to investigate it and try to find out what's going on, she becomes their focus, and she's their next victim. And she's only, because it seems that some of the administration is involved, the only one she can trust is a young sheriff who's helping her, and they move across the Four Corners area from the Navajo Nation Reservation, Canyon de Chelly, up into the mountains of Silverton in the Rockies. So it covers quite a bit of area.
Yeah. Well, you know, those out in the West, there is a lot of area they can cover.
A lot. Very a lot much so, yeah.
To find people too. So I've read her book. It was a fun read. So, So now we have Sharon's book, which is, you're going to have to say it, Sharon, because I'm just going to massacre it. Tell us your book name.
I've heard it always. It's Ko'ula'u, the Oahu. It's on Oahu, and they call the pronunciation would be Ko'ula'u.
Okay.
Ko'ula'u Secret.
Right. So it's based in the Hawaiian Islands.
Yes, on Oahu.
All right. And so tell us a little bit about it.
It involves the Ko'ula'u range, which is a mountain range on Oahu.
So we have a mountain theme.
Yes, a lot of it is in the mountain range. It's about a girl who gets a letter from her father, who's stationed at Fort Shafter on Oahu. He's a major, and he tells her not to worry about him because she won't hear from him for a while. And she finds it very suspicious. She winds up with her best friend going to Oahu to find out what's going on, and finds him missing. And she doesn't feel that the police department there is doing a good enough job looking for him, nor is the military. And she gets involved in it. And of course, you know, a lot of it, they don't know what's going on. So. And she runs into one of the detectives and has an interesting experience with him.
Well, we don't want to give too much of the books away, but it's interesting, I think, when talking to authors that I mean, your books are very different, and yet they have some similar themes. There's missing people, there's mountains, there's young love. I mean, that's why you write romantic suspense. So how do you come up with your plots? I mean, where do you get them? Is it based in real life? Or Sharon, you can go first. Where do they come from, your plots?
My plots kind of just come to me, but I'm sure it's based on the news and, you know, life experience, things I hear from other people, reading other books, and it kind of just evolves. I'm a pantser, and I'm an indie author, so it just kind of evolves in my brain, and it comes out, and I pray a lot about it, and every morning I wake up and I have to run in here and start writing something down.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned prayer, because I think that I don't pray enough for my writing like I should. I mean, really, you know, because I think God does care about our writing. But yes, it's good. It's just a good reminder that, you know.
But he knows your heart.
Yeah. But to pray about it, that it would, because there's that ministry aspect of it. I think when we write Christian fiction, that mm-hmm. we want it to be realistic. We want it to portray God in a way that will encourage a reader's heart or make them think about God in a different way, or, you know, perhaps rekindle faith.
Yes.
In that. So, yeah.
I try to get all of that into my stories.
Yeah, I think we all do. So Tanya, where do your ideas come from?
I'm a lot like Sharon, they just seem to evolve when I'm a full-time RVer. We sold our house about 4 years ago and moved into a very large motorhome, as you can probably see behind me. And we travel the country and visit a lot of different places. And what's nice about being a full-time RVer is that I get to park in the place and get to know it and get to feel things. And, you know, you hear a lot of things, and that just, there's something unique about the area that kind of triggers an idea. And that's where I get a lot of my ideas in terms of where things happen and, you know, events that happen. But all of the characterizations come from life, essentially, really. I have a large family. I have four children and 21 grandchildren. And, you know, when you have a large family like that, then there's something going on all the time. And I kind of look at it like I'm like you. I don't pray about my writing as much because I've wanted to be a writer since I was 11 years old. So to me, I'm living the dream, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's just a blessing. And I don't think about it being a ministry, but it is, because he's given me all these fantastic events and relationships, and they just seem to evolve into the story, whether I want them to or not. I end up writing about these real life experiences in kind of fantastic circumstances. So, you know, I do need to pray about it, like you said, because it really is to make sure I'm telling the story the way he would like me to tell it and get it out there in the right way. So
that's the main thing.
Yes. Yeah. So have you ever considered writing about a mystery with an RV? RV is the thing. Have you done that? I'm just curious.
I actually have. I thought about having a series, more of a cozy mystery about a woman who loses her husband and is in a, you know, in an RV park, and mysteries start evolving around that. But for some reason, I've just, the other stories have taken over, you know. I'm traveling, and all these fantastic ideas just keep popping into my head. So I just keep running with them.
Yeah. Have to get them out of your head. I mean,
I do. Know. Yeah. I have to get them out of there.
I think that's one of the funniest things to talk to people about writing who don't really write is just this compulsion we have to these stories. Like Sharon was saying, I get up and I have to run to your computer because these stories, these characters need to have a voice. They need to get out. Mm-hmm. And especially I have four children as well, but mine are much younger, no grandkids yet, please. They're all teenagers.
Oh no, don't ask for that.
But when they were younger, it was kind of frustrating because I didn't have as much time to write. And right. too, so it was like this battle in my head. Okay, I can't do that now. And by the time I did have time, I was so tired. So I feel like mm-hmm. I have a backlog of stories just swimming around in there.
After so my children were grown, that first 5 years, I did like 20 novellas in a year and a half because exactly of that. I've been putting it on the back burner for so long. And when I finally was able to write full time, it was like this flood that came out. Oh, it's coming.
I have
Sarah.
Notebooks. I have notebooks full of ideas.
Yeah.
So that brings me to, a good question. When do you find time to write? There's things to do for, setting up RV, you're traveling, write in Sharon. I know that, there's life. We have to, take a shower, feed the cat or.
I'm retired now from the 9-to-5 world, and this is my full-time job. And I treat it like a full-time job. I have mm-hmm. to get here. And that involves marketing because mm-hmm. I'm an indie. Marketing, getting my name out there. I run a newsletter monthly. I run a Facebook group forum for writers and readers. And all of that, I write for a magazine. And it's a full-time job.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned that because one thing when I talk to people who are like, yeah, I want to be a writer. I'm like, well, it might not be your full-time job at that time, but you still need to treat it like a job. Mm-hmm. Because if you treat it like a hobby, we all know what happens. You're not going to have time to write. You just won't have time. I realized this several years ago that I was leaving writing. It was always on my list every day, writing, but I would leave it till the last. And I'm like, I can't do that. So now I do it first. Mm-hmm. So I get at least, if I'm lucky, I get an hour, sometimes 45 minutes. So I can write a lot in an hour, and if I have other time during the day, I write more, but I find that I'm much more productive and it's been better for me getting those stories out. So Tanya, how about you? How do you fit writing into your RV life?
When we're traveling, I was getting up at 4:30 in the morning so that I could get at least a couple of hours in. I'm like you, I'm a block writer. I write in chunks. Yeah. So if I could get those couple of hours in the morning, then I would be done and I could go sightseeing and travel. And even now we're like 40 minutes out of a big town. So any shopping or anything, I try to get it done in the morning and schedule nothing in the morning. And all of my running around and errands will happen in the afternoon because I'm fresher in the morning. So for me, when I was in your position, one thing I did learn is that, I had a part-time job. And so I would get up in the morning and right before I went to work, and then I'd come home and do football and dance lessons and everything else that had to be done and then try to write in the evening. And I found myself burning out very quickly. I would get in the car to go someplace. My husband would be driving and I'd be asleep because I was burning the candle at both ends. So, even when you're home, you can do that as well. You try to crowd everything in. So I've learned to pace myself better and I work at getting that chunk of writing in and then I stop because it's important to maintain my health. That's right. Kind of an important issue.
Yeah. And like Sharon was saying that, no matter if you're indie or traditionally published, marketing and connecting with readers is important. You can't just write the book and just send it, say, okay, mm-hmm. I'm done. I mean, we kind of joke about that. Like that used to be the case, but not really. Somebody was doing the publicity for it. It just usually wasn't the author. And now the author right. has to do it. But so how do you work the marketing part in? Most authors, that's not their most fun thing to do, right? We all love connecting with readers, but the work it takes to connect sometimes can be exhausting. So how do you both work that into your schedules?
I have always hated selling. I've had a couple of jobs where I've had to do a little sales and I've always hated it. And when I found out I realized I had to sell my books, I thought, oh boy, this is going to be a nightmare. But I found it easier now because it's not a pushy type thing. I didn't go into it to make $1 million. I realized right away there are so many authors that the ones who make become extremely famous and make the hundreds of thousands of dollars a week or whatever, millions of dollars a week or whatever they're making, they're far and few between.
Yeah.
So when I went into it, I thought, I'll do what I can. And I learned a few tricks from here and there. And so now I'm on Twitter. I was told to pick a couple sites to do your marketing in. So I picked Facebook and Twitter. I'm mainly on Twitter with the marketing. And I have a company that does the marketing, some marketing for me. And I let it go from there. I just, I make myself known, you know, with the, get to know people, get personal with the readers.
Yeah. And I love that you said at the end to get personal with readers, because even more so today, even with social media, it's about making that personal connection with your readers. In any way we can do that. And it's not, it is less about selling your book as it is making that connection.
Yes. And I've made some wonderful friends through my readers.
Yes. Yeah. So Tanya, how do you connect with read? How do you handle the marketing part?
Well, I'm kind of unusual. I'm a people person and my background was in marketing. So I loved it when I first started and I loved the openness of connecting. And I was on Facebook all the time and Twitter, and I loved it. But again, I kind of got burnt out. And on top of that, we don't have the connection that we used to. You know, the algorithms have changed and the people we were connecting with and meeting with, they're not hearing from us anymore. So it's not as fun for me as it used to be. So I've kind of cut back on that. And as well, now we have Instagram and we have TikTok and we have so many more social mediums. You know, and every year I go back and I reevaluate how I want to do and what I want to do for the year and what I want to focus on. And we happen to be at that. It's January. You may not be listening to this in January, but right now we're in January. And that's when I reevaluate. And I just absolutely loved it because I was listening to one of my favorite podcasters and he said, I give you permission to get off of social media. And I went, oh, thank you. And I thought, okay, stop being silly, you know, stop chasing it. Cause I've always done like Sharon and focused on one, but I felt like I needed another shot in the arm and a change. And it was just so reinvigorating to hear, you know, stick with what you know, and don't worry about it. Let God sell the rest of it. So I pulled back again. I did hire, I have a virtual assistant and I have someone that helps me handle my social media because I'm writing quite a bit and I absolutely can't keep up with it. I needed help. So that's where I'm at and they do a great job. But I do miss, I'm going to have to say, I really do miss those initial contacts. You know, I'd go out and do a Facebook party and you get to touch base with people you hadn't heard in years. And I recently did one and half of them didn't even know I was online. So, you know, that's sad to me. I miss that part of connecting with the readers. That was the best part for me. So, you know, I'll continue to connect with them with my newsletter because I do hear from them there. But, you know, the early days of seeing everybody and talking to everybody and having this fantastic Facebook party, I think those days are gone and I will miss that for sure. I hope the readers miss it too. I hope they miss that, you know, connection we had there. So,
yeah. And I love that there's, like you said, it's a good time to evaluate and think, how are we reaching our readers? How do we connect with them? And that we have to change that sometime. I realized I was the same with you on Facebook parties. I did a few and they were great. And I did one, I don't know, it was last year or the year before, and it was awful.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like, where are the people? Because this was not the way it was. So just try, you know, I think we all have to be willing to try new things and figure out ways to keep that connection strong. And email lists are such a great way to do that because they're ours and nobody's going to change that but me.
Right. They're going to hear from me one way unless they say no more, you know, that's
right,
the good part.
Right.
Yeah.
So what about in person? I know like, you know, 2020, nobody did anything in person. Did you ever do like in-person book signings, either one of you or anything like that?
I did.
Yes, I have, but I'm not, I wasn't impressed with doing book signings.
Yeah. I had
some great book signings at my local independent bookstore. I always had great success with that. But, you know, of course, now with 2020, I know that's not a possibility. But it was a lot of fun in the beginning to connect with people who knew I was writing, you know, and I sold great things in those, and, you know, but that was 4 or 5 years ago. I don't think it's going to happen anymore. I think it's going to be a totally different thing. And used to be one of the reasons where we used to get together was just writing classes, talking about our careers and how to get started. Now, so much of that is online. You're not going to see that feedback in a book signing as well. So I just don't see it much in the future other than to get together with other writers, perhaps, and do signings there. Right. That's just
even,
how I
see even it. Our book, our writing groups are online now because of the situation.
Right. Right.
Yeah, I know. I did. I did a couple of craft shows this fall, and I was quite pleased with that.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't sold tons and tons of books, but it was enough to cover my booth fee and, you know, more than that, my time. And I thought, yeah, I like those better than like book signings because it was just always fun to stop people. And I'm an introvert by nature, and it's hard for me. I had to figure out what is my patter? What am I going to say? I really had to think about it. I don't, you know, because I'm not saying buy my book. I just want them to stop to talk to me, right? You want to get them to look.
Right.
Maybe they don't want to buy it, but maybe they'll buy it for someone else, or maybe they'll take a bookmark or whatever. But yeah, so I stop people by saying, what do you like to read? Or do you like to read? Yeah. And then I'd say what I wrote, and sometimes we just have a conversation. So it was really, that was really kind of refreshing and a little very low key on the sales part. And I wasn't sitting there behind a table with books and people walking by. I'm like, okay, nobody, you know, like for a book signing can be kind of intimidating. So
that's my first question when I go out somewhere where I do run into people now is, do you read? Do you like fiction? And then I hand them my business card.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's just, it's been interesting to hear the answers to that. Because sometimes it is no, not as much as I used to. A couple people asked me about audio, if I had on audiobooks. I don't have any of those yet. That's a little bit of I'm kind of exploring that, but I think I'm going to need more books and a little more sales before I dip my toe into that water. Personally for producing them myself. How about you? Do you, either of you have audiobooks?
I don't.
No.
I'm really not that interested in doing it right now. I'm not quite sure why.
Yeah. Tanya?
No, I don't have any. I was with a small publisher for a number of years, and they've just recently started looking at some of my backlist to put on audio, but I'm kind of surprised Love Inspire doesn't do audio. I would have thought that would have been something they would have been interested in, but they're not. And personally, even though I personally can't get into audiobooks, so I haven't explored it, I think, for that reason, but I know it's really popular with a lot of people. And the more podcasts become popular, I think the more audio is going to become popular. So I know at some point in time, I should probably cross over into that venue. But like you said, it's a little bit expensive and I don't know if the return's there yet. So I've just kind of been hanging back. I'm honestly too busy.
That's my problem.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
No time.
Well, speaking of time, we are out of time, ladies. So I'm going to have to say thank you again for being on my show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Yeah. It was great to talk to you, Sarah.
Great. Thank you. You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I've been talking to Sharon K. Connell and Tanya Stowe. You can find out more about their most recent books and ways to connect with them in the bio for this show.
Vanished in the Mountains by Tanya Stowe. A search for missing women leads to a deadly pursuit. When domestic violence counselor Dulcie Parker uncovers evidence of a human trafficking ring in the Four Corners area, she's determined to stop it or die trying. With corruption all around her and killers on her trail, Deputy Sheriff Austin Turner's the one person she can trust. But can they work together to expose the crime ring before she becomes the next victim?
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.